Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Mary Kay Sheehan on the line, and she is CEO of Lightways Hospice and Serious Illness Care. Mary Kay, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, Mary Kay, so I'm excited to speak with you today about today's topic. So we'll talk about really the guidance and the support that you are providing for families, as some of their loved ones are nearing the end of their life. And we'll talk about what that looks like, hospice care. Like, we'll also talk about really taboo, it's a pretty taboo situation or discussion, I'd say, in America, really just dying in America, like what that looks like and why we don't talk about it more. So excited to get into all these topics and also get your unique vantage point from that. But we'll start this episode like we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So Mary Kay, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission here. Mary Kay, what mission matters to you?
The mission that matters to me is a blend of personal and professional. So I believe in being transparent and being honest and being compassionate, which all led me to become a nurse and work with oncology patients. My other mission, don't laugh, is to get America to say the word death and dying instead of euphemisms like passing and all the words we use instead of.
Yeah.
But I want to share a story that kind of allows you to understand why I do hospice care. Mm-hmm. So I had a patient who was at home. Mary Pat was her name, and she was Catholic, very religious. Mm-hmm. And she had colon cancer, and she and I really bonded, the Catholic thing, the Irish Catholic thing, we bonded. Yeah. And we had a wonderful relationship, even though it was professional. And as she started to kind of get confused, and I asked her what was it like? What was she feeling going through this process? And she said, well, I'm really excited to meet Jesus.
Yeah.
Because I think he's really sexy. And I was kind of taken aback. I said, what? She said, oh, yeah, I'm going to have a great conversation with him. And when I get there, she said, I'll send you a sign. And she said, the sign won't be anything dramatic. She said, don't expect, thunder and signs to fall down, but I'll be sure to let you know. So I said, okay. So I was actually there the night she died. It was a hot July night. And on my way home, lightning all started in a no rain, no clouds, just lightning led me all the way home. And I sat in my backyard. It was like 3 a.m. and I just watched this lightning and thought of Mary Pat and thought, this is the way we can really impact patients and families, is to make this process something that isn't so scary. So that's my mission.
What an amazing story. I have chills right now. Like what an amazing story. And sometimes when people find their calling or their path, and you just have that urge, you have that thing, like what a sign. So she did send you the lightning.
Did. It was pretty dramatic, I thought.
You said, I'm glad you didn't really send the drama like you said. If this was your non-dramatic version, right?
Imagine the dramatic version. Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. I mean, it's a great story, and I know one that's very personal. So thank you for sharing that. So I want to go further into today's topic. So really, kind of dying in America and like why this is such a taboo topic in general. Like what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think that people believe that if we talk about it, it will happen.
Oh.
So that if people talk about planning for even when we're healthy, I mean, the best time to make plans for when you're sick is when you're healthy, because you're not as stressed. Your family's not as stressed. But I think we're afraid to do that because we think it will bring it on somehow, which I can promise you is not true. The second thing is that I think people want to keep that distance, that emotional distance between my life and my death. And if I don't talk about it, think about it, it won't happen. And so I think we protect ourselves. That's why we use words like passing and Rainbow Bridge and transitioning, and we lost somebody. Yeah. Instead of saying somebody died, it makes it too real and too painful. And, you know, when I was a child, my father died when I was young. And we've learned a lot about grief in the very few years since I was a child. But we used to believe that we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Because if we talk about it, it'll make me, it'll make a child feel worse. Mm-hmm. And what we've learned is I'm already thinking about it. Mm. So talking about it will not make me feel worse. It will make me feel better. So that's kind of the theory that we in hospice work under, is that we'll actually, if we talk about things, you'll actually get more insight, more understanding, and be less anxious than you would. So that's what that's why I think there's this taboo about it. Mm-hmm.
So sometimes I've found that when people don't talk about things, and this is just from my vantage point, you know, like and what you just described to me, putting on my old fashioned financial advisor hat from when I used to help people with that. A lot of times that fear and other things that you just mentioned, like some of those things are synonymous in terms of some reasonings why people avoid it, like that avoidance, right?
Right.
So a lot of times it's because they don't have the right tools. Like they don't know how to talk about it as well.
Right.
What kind of like, you know, not obviously this is going to change from, you know, person to person, age group, things like that. But how do you advise that somebody could maybe educate themselves or learn about how to start having that conversation? Because there'll be some people watching this that are like, man, where do I even begin?
Right. Right. And you're right. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. So the first place I would advise people to start is talking to their own doctor about, you know, their wishes and their choices. Mm-hmm. The doctors will actually have some paperwork that they can, you know, give a patient and family to talk about it. The other thing is, you know, just do a Google search on living will, on five wishes, which is a document we use, power of attorney, and state by state, they differ by state. So you'll have to look up your state's documents and find out what you need to use. The other thing is really to call your local hospice, and it sounds crazy, but we have all those things. You know, we know how to talk to people about that, and we have social workers. So we could help somebody get that, you know, get the forms that they need and talk about how to start that conversation. Mm-hmm. It's a hard conversation.
Absolutely. And what about like, let's just say, so even stepping back a little bit further. So let's just say that, and maybe this is the same answer, but I'm just curious, like, cause we don't, as you know, when we're talking to somebody when they're healthy, right. Or like even further back, or even, you know, not necessarily, maybe they're even younger. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what I tell people is, to just talk to your family. So everyone should first think about who they want their power of attorney to be.
Yeah.
So your power of attorney for healthcare will make decisions for you when you're not able. So you should really think about that. Who's that going to be? And then start to have conversations. And, you know, the way I did it with my mom, for example, is we would, you know, we're Irish. We read the obituaries every day. Right. And so we would talk.
I didn't know that. This is an Irish thing. You're educating me right now. Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Well,
it's a thing.
It's a thing. Yeah. Okay. I don't know why, but morning paper, cup of coffee. We look at the obituaries.
Interesting. Okay.
I think to see if there's anybody, you know,
of course, I understand.
But also, you know, see how people die. You know, it's just morbid curiosity maybe, but, so as we would see these obituaries, I would talk to my mom about, because you'd see things in obituaries, like they died in a hospital or they died in a nursing home. And so that would open the door for me to talk to my mom and say, Mom, where do you want to, where, you know, do you think about this? Where would you like to be when you're sick? And we'd have a conversation and she would tell me, you know, I don't want to be in the hospital. I don't want to be in a nursing home. I want to be home. Or I want to be in a nursing home because I don't want to stress you out, you and your sister out. So, you know, it varies. And then just talking about, you know, if this, then Mom, what would you want? And you'd be surprised. It sounds horrifying, but you'd be surprised how people want to talk about this. And now with the holidays coming up, you're going to see your family members. It's a perfect time. And it's awkward and it's hard to do, but it's really necessary so that your wishes are known to people. You know, a lot of the stories I have, the patients I've taken care of are people who did not have that conversation. And have you ever been a power of attorney yet? I'm a medical power of attorney for anybody.
I have not been, no.
It's a big responsibility. It's a hard job. And it's made harder if you haven't had those conversations. Yeah. So if a patient, I've had many patients who are dying and they can tell me that they don't want to go into the hospital and they don't want to have a feeding tube, but they're afraid to tell their family.
Yeah.
Because their family will think then they're giving up. So to have those kind of conversations, to not put that pressure on the power of attorney to to imagine what mom or dad or brother would want, it's really hard. So, you know, do your family a favor and have those conversations. It's one of the biggest gifts you can give somebody. Because I've been with power of attorneys on the other end who don't know what would, you know, mom had a sudden stroke. She she's on a ventilator. She's likely not going to come off the ventilator. And what would, I don't know what she would want.
Oh,
you know, the hand wringing and the pain that that causes when, if you'd had that conversation, you know, I could say with my mom, you know, she does not want to be kept on machines. She does not want to be fed. You know, I know that to be true. And it makes that decision-making so much less painful. I mean, it's still a painful, awful situation, but you won't have the what ifs, should I have done, should I have done, you know, we don't want people to have those because that'll affect your grief. That'll affect you for life.
Absolutely. When,
you know, you've had to make decisions for somebody. So.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm kind of thinking about it and how my family has kind of addressed some of these things. And I don't know how to explain it, but I think ever since I was a kid, we kind of talked about it. It was a thing. And I don't know if it's the Catholic thing. I don't know what it
might be.
But I'll tell you the joke. It's kind of a joke, but kind of not.
Yeah.
Like if my mom gets mad or somebody gets mad, it's like, ah, you're out of the cemetery plot. You're not, I'm not burying you next to us.
Yeah, we do that too.
Like that's our threat. Like we won't be buried next to our parents or anything else like that. Or, oh, you're out of it now.
Yeah.
It's not, you're out of the will. It's all you're not going to be. I'm not going to
Yeah, my mom kicks me out of the will if I.
They kick us. My mom kicks us out of the cemetery.
That's even worse.
She's like, we're putting you on the other side or whatever. I'm not going to let it happen.
Right. I mean, see, there is humor in this.
There is. And that's why I bring that up is that like once you the thing is like once you open up the dialogue, it allows for other things to happen. And you'd be surprised. Like you just said, you'd be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised because we again, I get kicked out of the cemetery plot sometimes when I was younger. Now I'm fine. I think I'm in. But
yeah, well, you're young still. So
but just in general, I don't know. So like there is another side to you having these discussions and whether it's, you know, with somebody that's younger or otherwise, like having those discussions over time. And I think it does allow for other things to happen and you be, and it can, the dynamic can like change over time so that, you know, and then I'm going back to what you mentioned in terms of like the seriousness of it all and having to, you know, make decisions when it is time to make those decisions either way, being prepared and having that, you know, context of that dialogue. And also the we won't even get into because we could be here all day with this one, the family dynamics, right?
Oh, yeah.
Of the people that aren't, and there's brothers and sisters and one person versus another and all these other things. It's really important to have these discussions ahead of time. So appreciate you sharing this. I want to switch it up. Let's change gears a bit. So tell me a little bit more about Lightway. So tell me, we know of course hospice care, but tell me more.
Okay. So Lightways Hospice and Serious Illness Care. We used to be called Joliet Area Community Hospice. We just changed our name a year ago because we're growing. We are in the suburbs of Chicago. We're in Illinois and we take care of 11 counties around the city. We kind of do a little curve around the city and take care of all the collar counties and all the West and Southern suburbs. We were founded in 1982. We're a nonprofit hospice and palliative care program. Mm-hmm. And we are currently taking care of, on a daily basis, about 800 patients and families throughout the area. Most of our patients are either in nursing homes or in their own homes. But we also have an inpatient hospice unit. Now there are 5,000 hospices around the country. So every hospice is a little different. But we're fortunate to have a place where people can come if they're too sick to be at home. So we take care of patients of all diagnoses, all ages, and we have a pediatric program. We have children who die, children who have serious illness. And we have a team of professionals that take care of these patients and, you know, follow the patient's wishes. We get patients at all sorts of timing. Mm-hmm. So the Medicare hospice benefit, which is the most common place that people will get funded for hospice, mm-hmm. is a 6-month benefit. So that's 180 days. Mm-hmm. Our average length of stay is 60 days. Mm-hmm. And across the country, it's 90 days. So people aren't accessing hospice early enough, which is something that Lightwave struggles with, too. I've been the CEO for almost 6 years. I'm a nurse, and I have a master's in nursing and an MBA. And this is a wonderful community, as most hospices are. We have 200 staff and about 250 volunteers who help with patient care, help in the office, who do wonderful things for us, including raise money, because we are a not-for-profit.
So obviously a lot of grief in the world right now due to COVID and other things. Like how do people get help? Like, how do they reach out?
Thank you for asking that. I think that grief is having a greater impact than we can possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. One of the patients that we had recently was in the hospital, and he had a sudden onset of a disease, and his wife could not get up to see him because of COVID and some other things. Yeah. But he started to decline very quickly, and he was dying. And he and his wife had not had those conversations that we're talking about. So when she went to see, so he died, unfortunately, very quickly. And when she went up to see him, the night before, he had taken little sticky notes and written on them and put them all over his body with notes to her.
About
you know, where the checkbook is and how to access the savings account. And, you know, here's what the dog needs. Here's when he's due for his next checkup.
No.
It was so heartbreaking that they couldn't say goodbye. And so that kind of grief on people, and you have one loss and you have another loss, and that grief builds, right? It intensifies, and it really affects us. It affects our workforce. It affects our own health. Mm-hmm. So my advice is that people really, most hospices do what we call community bereavement. So we are open to anybody in the community who's had a loss, and we'll provide to them group support groups, one-on-one counseling sessions, memorial services, anything that everyone's a little different in their grief. I always tell people, don't put me in a support group. I would do one-on-one counseling. So first you have to recognize that you're having symptoms of grief. You know, the sadness and the apathy and the just, you know, you're not feeling like you want to participate in life. Think about that it might be grief. And call your local hospice organization and ask for help. And I think counseling, you can always get some counseling as well, but talk to your doctor too. I mean, grief is something that impacts our health. There's a lot of new studies out about that. And so I think just recognizing it as an issue and not being ashamed to ask for help is really important.
So what kind of advice would you give to somebody that's been diagnosed? And I know the one that you just mentioned, that was pretty sudden, but for somebody else that's going to be a little bit more prolonged and they've just been diagnosed that, you know, they're nearing the end of their life. Like, right. What kind of advice would you give to the family and them?
Right. I would say that, first of all, they need to have, you know, back to my mission statement, transparency mm-hmm. and honesty yeah. about what's really happening. Talking to the physician and finding out prognosis and all those kind of things. It's hard to ask, but the doctor will tell you. And then just talking together as a family about what, you know, I call it a family meeting. We have them in our family and, you know, what do we need to do? How do we take care of mom and dad? What are the things we need to put in place? Who's going to do what? Who can do financial stuff? Who can do the healthcare stuff? Who can, and then call a hospice. Please call your hospice. Because even though you don't think you're dying right now, hospice can be there for months, years. We've taken care of patients. People think it's, you know, for the last minutes or that it's a place that you go to. It's not. It's a concept that comes to you. And it is for anybody who has a terminal illness. Let us help you. You know, we had one patient who wanted to ride a horse. So we made sure. So we got her on a horse. We had another patient who was an Indian chief and he wanted to have a ceremony with his family. So we did that for him. So it's really about living every day until you die. It's not about dying. It's about how do I make the most of the time that I have left? Who do I need to talk to? What relationships do I need to mend? Spirituality. Yeah. You know, do I need to talk to a chaplain or my priest or whoever? It's just coming up with a plan that everyone feels comfortable with. You know, some people have pain and they'd rather be in pain than take pain medicine.
Yeah.
Those are things you need to know so you can take care of somebody in the best way. So conversations. Don't be afraid of the conversations. Don't be afraid to call your hospice and ask for help. We can just do, you know, we can just provide you with some support and information to help guide the way. And that all you need to do is call your hospice and say, I need help. And the hospice should take it from there. We'll call your doctor. We'll do, you know, anything that needs to be done. But don't try and do this alone. It's too scary. And we know, you know, the biggest thing about dying, Adam, is that people don't do it, right? They only do it once and you don't come back. Well, maybe some people come back. That's another topic. But people don't know how to do it. People don't know how to take care of somebody who's dying. And so they need help. That's the biggest thing hospice does is provide education about what to expect, what's going to happen next, so that it's not so frightening. You should never be alone in this journey. And that's why we say we provide unwavering guidance and support for people who are going through this process and don't know where to turn. And it, you know, the other thing I want to say is it doesn't matter if you have no insurance or no Medicare. As a nonprofit, we take care of anybody regardless of ability to pay. And please let us help you. That's really what I want to say to people. Please let us help you. And please have those conversations that are so hard to have.
Oh, well said, Mary Kay, and I can definitely sense and feel your heart and just like your mission and your values behind what you're doing and why you're doing it to really serve as a beacon of hope, you know, for these families during this time. And I also love how you said it's not a place, it's a concept that comes to you. Like when you said that, I just like my whole thought process around it shifted in those examples of the Indian chief and all the other things you mentioned. That really paints a good picture of how people can reframe their thought process around what that end of life looks like, what the relationship with the hospice looks like, and really how to help, you know, help towards when somebody is about to die. So I was going to say when they're about to pass, but I'm helping with your mission, Mary Kay. So when somebody's about to die, and it's okay to say that. Okay. So I'm going to try to add that to my lexicon as well to be one of your advocates over here. And what we're doing. So I'll just say, first off, this has been great, really enlightening for myself. And I believe my audience will also be enlightened on how to think about this relationship. So what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Lightways?
Well, we just continue to grow. hospices are becoming more acceptable in the medical community. And so we just intend to keep taking care of patients. And our pediatric program is growing. And it's, you know, the biggest thing we do, I guess, is education. Is, you know, our plan is to continue to help our community in any way that we can. And that means, you know, having events and reaching out to people, reaching out to doctors, to get to the patients that need us. That's really what we're all about, is how do we do that? We're also creating new programs. For example, we've had a really increase in ALS patients, Lou Gehrig's disease, which, you know, is a very, very hard disease, and it's usually a young person. So we've had about 40, we have about 40 patients in our ALS program. So we have a whole team that works together to just work with those patients and their particular needs. And the other thing we're doing is lots of telehealth. We're doing telemedicine visits, and we're trying to work with patients so they don't, you know, we can monitor them from afar. So we don't have to go to their house. Some people don't like us in their house every day. So, you know, we do the best we can to keep monitoring them from afar. So we're just staying, we're just trying to stay on top of what's coming down in healthcare and make sure that we're ready to take care of those patients in the best way possible.
Well, Mary Kay, really, it's been a pleasure having you on the show and getting to learn more about Lightways and why you do what you do and how you do it as well. If somebody's watching this and they want more and they want more information, what's the best way for them to follow up?
The best way really is our website, www.lightways.org. That's lightways.org. And that will give you all the information that you need to get hold of us. You can do a referral that way. You can, it'll have all our phone numbers depending on what kind of service you need. And please reach out. And what I want to say too is that even if you don't live in Illinois, we can still help you find a program in your area.
Oh, that's helpful.
So like if you live in, you know, Florida or wherever, we have a directory of all the hospices. Yeah. So we'll help you get to a good program.
Very helpful. And thank you for sharing that. To the audience that's watching, we're going to put all this information in the show notes. So you can just go to it, click on the website, and you'll get right there. Speaking of clicking, if this is your first time watching the show, we bring on mission-based business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives each and every day and really have them share why they do what they do, like what motivates them, like where's their passion. We have many more mission-based individuals coming up for you, and we don't want you to miss a thing. So definitely hit that subscribe button so that you can stay tuned in. And Mary Kay, really, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your mission and really why you do what you do. So thank you.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you.